Welcome back to the podcast. This week we roll into a story on skateboarding, a sport that is often restricted in public spaces but has generated a community at ASU that strives for inclusivity and empowerment.
Also, sports gambling apps have significant impacts on the industry and students.
I'm Tyler Abrams.
I'm Tate Daniels, and this is State Press Play.
Also this week at ASU, a recent rise in vaccine hesitancy has caused massive outbreaks of diseases such as measles.
But first, skateboarding culture has a place at ASU to explore inclusivity and representation. We look to the Women's Skate Club at ASU. I'm here with State Press community reporter Natalia Jarrett to delve into the challenges and aspirations of the skateboarding community on campus. Thanks for coming on the podcast this week, Natalia.
Thanks for having me.
In your article, you talk about the Women's Skate Club's mission to create a safe and inclusive space for women who are interested in skateboarding. Can you share a little bit more with us about the club's effort to bring acceptance and a sense of community for women who are interested in skating?
Well, when I was talking to Kennedy Cowles, the president of Women's Skate Club at ASU, she mentioned that she would never turn anyone away, no matter what their gender is or sexuality or race. Everybody that I talked to, even like former members and presidents, said that that was a clear thing that they wanted in the club, was just inclusivity. And they highlighted that as a way that they also made friends. So it's not just like checking off diversity points. It's kind of like, it's definitely something that they live by.
Now, the club is having a hard time feeling fully embraced on ASU's campuses, particularly with the skateboarding restrictions such as walk-only zones littering Tempe's campus. How do you think ASU can better accommodate skateboarding communities while also addressing concerns about safety and noise?
Something that Kennedy mentioned was ASU could build a skate park, or at least a skate spa, on ASU's campus. And I think they brought that up to ASU in the past, and they didn't really hear much about it, but they think that would be a way for them to be able to skate and to enjoy themselves without having to like disturb people around them and be too loud.
Your article also touches on the issue of gender bias within the skateboarding community and the efforts to promote inclusivity. How do you believe that initiatives like the Women's Skate Club contribute to challenging stereotypes and creating a friendly sense of community for women skaters?
Well, skating since the 90s has been very male-dominated, and there aren't very many pro skaters that are women. So by having clubs like Women's Skate Club on ASU's campus, that gives like a place for women to skate. It gives women a designated area to skate comfortably without maybe feeling like they don't belong in a male-centered space.
Thank you for coming on the podcast this week, Natalia.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
That was State Press community reporter Natalia Jarrett. You can check out her story and more on statepress.com.
Sports gambling has taken the nation by storm over the past couple of years. Conversations about sports are now filled with talk of which team is favored more or which team has the best odds to bet on. What's now being researched is the effect this has had within the college campuses. Andrew Durst has more on the effect that sports gambling has had on students. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Andrew.
Thank you for having me.
So, Andrew, can you just give me a quick summary for your article, just kind of the main points that you were researching?
So I kind of go into like three main things: the rise of sports gambling and why that happened, how underage betting happens specifically and at ASU, and the consequences that can result from that. So in terms of how sports gambling came to be and how big it is now, the main thing I learned was that it is pretty much because of COVID and how COVID impacted leagues' profits negatively, obviously. And so leagues needed money to fill that void. And so they partnered with apps like FanDuel and DraftKings and all kinds of sports books. And now that's why those are so integrated. But this ease of access also allows for more illegal gambling than ever seen before. And even though the betting age in Arizona specifically is 21, students, ASU students are able to get into sports gambling very easily. And it can have a lot of issues that we definitely go into in the story.
And what are the main differences between betting on, let's say, the winner of a ball game versus putting money into a March Madness pool or a fantasy sports league?
That's kind of the question, is like, where do you draw that line? It's pretty blurry a lot of the time. But from what I see, or from what I've seen, March Madness pools and fantasy football can have cash involved, and they often do, but it's almost always informal and between friends or coworkers or something like that. And then with sports betting, at least on apps like FanDuel or in more like professional, in more professional settings, as well as some other more regulated forms of gambling, is how addictive it's shown to be and the resulting problems that can come with that.
And so leaning on to how popular this has become, it seems like sports gambling has almost become a nationwide sport. 38 states have legalized it to date, but what is most interesting is its effect on college sports specifically. Did you find any interesting impacts that sports gambling had on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the NCAA has definitely had a lot recently with sports betting, specifically. Like, Charlie Baker, the president of the NCAA, just announced like a week or two ago of a ban on prop bets in college because of the dangers that can have both for people betting and the players themselves who like were receiving threats. Like, North Carolina's Armando Bacot was receiving threats because of, I think, something to do with a prop bet. And then also, like, the NCAA in a 2023 study found that 58% of 18 to 22 year olds have placed at least one sports bet, and that 67% of students on college campuses are bettors. And though I think those numbers, because of a pretty small sample size of about 3,000 to 4,000, are a little bit inflated, I don't want to think it's 67% of students on college campuses. It's still somewhere in that ballpark, and it's definitely a big issue, whether it's legally for college students over 21 or illegally, which it is a lot of the time for these students under 21. But regardless of legality, people are going to find a way to bet one way or another.
That's a lot of students that are betting on sports and betting on games. But have you talked to any students here at ASU that have actually tried to make money off of these sports betting apps?
So the student I talked to in this story, again, I want to thank him for being like so vulnerable and so detailed on his approach and his story with gambling. He has won some big parlays of $100, $200. But then when he would bet for 3 to 4 months straight, he'd bet $5 a day over and over. And maybe he wins a few of those, but in the end, he's going to lose money. Another person I know uses this app Fliff, just like the student I talked to in the story, and has never even spent a dollar on there, and is still using that to occasionally place a bet for fun, and has never spent any of his own money. Do I think that's sustainable? No. But some students have made some money, but I don't think anyone makes enough money for it to be like a justifiable source of income. The amount of time you spend on there, the amount of time you spend researching, will almost never be worth the amount of money you make, if you make any at all.
Since sports gambling is legal for people age 21 and older in Arizona, have there been any changes that prevent apps like Fliff from allowing underage sports bettors?
In Arizona, pretty clear on where the line is right now at that 21. I don't see anything that's specifically targeting apps that are kind of like this and illegal sites, because illegal sites, from what I've learned from this story, are always going to exist. Like I said earlier, people are going to find a way to bet. People are going to find a way to bet one way or another. But in the case of an app like Fliff, it's kind of in this weird gray area where I don't know if it will be cracked down on, because technically it is legal from what I've learned. Again, I'm not the right person to like completely talk about the legality and everything. Pat Evans, who I talked to in this story, is a writer for Legal Sports Report, and he does a lot of great work kind of going into legality on sports betting and stuff. But from what I learned about Fliff from these interviews is they don't ask for identification. And they describe themselves as a sweepstakes app or a social sports book, and kind of hide the monetary part of the betting behind more of the fluff of the app and how, like, you know, it's a sweepstakes. You're not betting real money. You're betting, like, the interview I talked to, he said it was like almost Monopoly money that you would buy, but you'd get real stuff. You'd get coin. You get cash that's worth real money almost under the table. So it's technically legal, but there's definitely a conversation to be had, because from everyone I talked to, they said it's pretty sketchy and even predatory at times in how it operates.
Well, it's clear now that sports betting will continue to hold the attention of both college students and sports fans alike. Thanks for coming on the podcast, Andrew.
Thank you so much for having me.
That was State Press Echo reporter Andrew Durst. You can read his article and more on statepress.com.
We will be right back after this break.
Hey Tyler, I love State Press Play, and I want to support the State Press, Arizona State University's student-run independent news publication.
That's great to hear, Abby. You can donate to College Media Madness.
What is College Media Madness?
I'm glad you asked. College Media Madness is a fundraising event for U.S. college student media publications to promote their own fundraising campaigns and compete with the other participating student publications for donations.
So I can support the State Press in their fundraising efforts?
That's right. You can donate to collegemediamadness.com to support our work.
The argument for increasing vaccination rates has always been a split subject for many. Here is why some people are quote-unquote stuck on misinformation about vaccines. I'm here with State Press SciTech reporter Hunter Ray to tell us more about the challenges and strategies surrounding vaccination hesitancy. Thank you for joining us on the podcast, Hunter.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man.
So, in your article, you discuss the 3 C's model of vaccine hesitancy: convenience, confidence, and complacency. Could you elaborate on how each of these factors contributes to individuals' decisions regarding vaccination and how experts are considering addressing them?
Yeah, so the 3 C's model is, I don't know if this makes sense, but it kind of like all blends together sometimes. Convenience describes things like, will your health insurance accept this? How far away are you? Are you able to get there in a timely manner safely? And that's even something I've dealt with when trying to get my booster shot. I had to walk like 4 miles just to get it. That can lead a lot of people to just say like, oh, I'll just do this tomorrow. And then they continuously say that and they just constantly put it off and then they never get it done. And then confidence really deals with trust. How much trust does the average person place in the medical system or the federal government, who usually aids with the production of vaccines as well as helps distribute them? And we've seen lately how just people really don't have a lot of trust in the medical system, especially since the coronavirus pandemic. And then complacency usually deals with people kind of thinking like, how will this affect me, without really thinking about how will this affect the greater population. And usually we usually use herd immunity, but currently there are only about 70% of the United States is vaccinated against COVID-19, and 69% of kids under the age of 2 have all 7 shots. And we really need about 94% of the population to be vaccinated in order for herd immunity to kick in.
So your article also mentions a project that aims to share the testimonials of those who have overcome vaccine hesitancy. How do personal stories influence public perceptions and attitudes towards vaccination, especially in the current wave of widespread misinformation?
Yeah, so I got to talk to Dr. Alexis Koskan, who has been working with a nursing professor here at ASU to provide a database of testimonials for former anti-vaxxers to detail why they got the vaccine and why they should as well. In her research, she's really found that for a lot of people, facts and statistics just do not really grab people, especially us in the science community like to call it science talk, where we talk in a way that's not really easily understandable by the general population. And that's something that we struggle with. And so when it comes to this project that she is working on, it's just people talking to people without trying to talk down to them, just giving them personal stories, and she thinks that will really help convince people who may be hesitant to get vaccines to get the shots.
Your article also talks about the issue of racial bias within the medical system and its impact on patient trust. How are medical experts working to address this bias and build trust with minority communities when it comes to vaccine education and access?
Yeah, so a really ugly part of American history is that especially in terms of African-American and Latino populations, medical society essentially has not been the greatest of them. And I talked to Dr. Joshua LeBaire, who just said that doctors are people too. They will have their own opinions, they will have biases, and that's really tough when you're a medical professional, especially working with those communities who studies have shown have more rates of outbreaks compared to Caucasian and Asians. And the way that he said to really get on their side is to just build trust with them, just listen to them. If they have any questions or concerns, answer them in a way that is friendly, but also gets your point across. I think that really hammers home what we need to do. Something that I learned while doing my research is that you should not talk down to someone or essentially insult them if they don't get vaccinated, because that's usually going to lead them to not want to get vaccinated even more. Be friendly, gain their trust, and make sure that they know that you have their best interests in mind.
Thank you for coming on the podcast with us, Hunter.
Thank you. My pleasure. Great to be here.
That was State Press science and technology reporter Hunter Ray. You can check out his article and more on statepress.com.
And that's all for this week's State Press Play. I'm Tyler Abrams.
And I'm Tate Daniels. State Press Play is produced by our podcast desk editor, Gabriella Fernbaugh. Our original music is by Ellie Willard and Jake LaRue.
Special thanks to our managing team, Alexis Heichman and Morgan Cabasco.
You can check out all these stories and more on statepress.com. See you next week.